And we are live.
Welcome back, beautiful and amazing human beings. I can't be too loud. I'm actually in Riga, Latvia, at a very weird, strange little hotel room that's giving some of my friends the heebie-jeebies. There's a lot of strange little weird art there. But anyway, welcome back to the live We Are Change show. Sorry, Jason, I probably messed up the frame of the shot already. It is 2 o'clock in the morning here. Obviously, we are in Eastern Europe, taking some time off away from the craziness from Bilderberg because I need a rest. But we're going to be live here, still continuing the show, going over the most important news that happened this week. We're also going to be live on Facebook and Periscope, but we're going to be communicating with everyone and engaging with everyone on, of course, our YouTube channel on youtube.com/WeAreChange. Super chats, of course, go first. And super chats help us be fully independent because, obviously, they're a way of having you guys not only have your comments read and engage with us, but also keep us fully independent and unlike BuzzFeed that is promoted by companies like ExxonMobil and other horrible despotic corporations and governments that buy up media and influence in order to sell you a whole bunch of lies and bullcrap and propaganda. Jason is joining me. He, of course, is in New York. Jason, how are you?
I'm very well. It's great to know that BuzzFeed, that gives me some of the best infotainment lists about Thundercats and Bikini Babes, is sponsored by ExxonMobil because, you know, they also did a very large piece, of course, on the Russian scandal. They were the ones that were breaking the dossier. And they do promote a lot of mainstream propaganda on
the
top of their...
Where Trump supposedly goes to Russia and gets peed on by prostitutes. Are you talking about that dossier?
That would be the dossier. I don't think anybody is familiar, Luke, with any other dossiers anymore because we don't call things dossiers because we're mature human beings. And it shows kind of like the language that they're using. Again, you know, they're great for the kids react to System of a Down videos or they hear Wu-Tang Clan for the first time. Good for you, BuzzFeed. But it's nice to see that you're promoted by the good people at ExxonMobil. Obviously, the benevolent oil barons out there are looking out for mine and your best interest, Luke.
Yeah, there's no bigger interest here. There's no reason to lie. They're just financing and sponsoring media for absolutely no reason at all. And, you know, this is why we're different. This is why we're mainly sponsored by you guys. And there's been a lot of news, a lot of conflicting news that makes a lot of people scratch their heads this week. Some news makes Donald Trump look really bad, and some news that makes Donald Trump look really good. Here at We Are Change, we let go of our biases and our, like, any preconceived notions. We try to call it like we see it. And I think one of the stories that I think is really big that just happened this week that, of course, does not shed a good light on the Donald Trump administration is, of course, how the State Department and Donald Trump personally just authorized funding for the Syrian white helmets. And obviously, if anyone's been paying attention, there's a lot of controversy around the white helmets who do operate in Syria, who are videotaped with radical Islamic terrorists, who do look, and there is a lot of evidence saying that they are supporting them or working with them, and also that they have been staging videos of chemical weapons attack that have led directly to U.S. intervention and the U.S. bombing Syrian government forces, who, of course, are also fighting against these radical Islamic terrorists, the whole big connected story. And a lot of people are pointing to the fact that because the United States is now officially, loudly, and proudly resuming their funding for the white helmets, that people are expecting, of course, a false flag. As we know, the Russian government and many Russian ministers have been warning that there is a big potential that the United States may stage or even Al-Qaeda or ISIS or al-Nusra or any other the bad bunch of apples that are within Syria that, of course, were financed by Turkey, Israel, Saudi Arabia, and the United States to be there to overthrow Bashar al-Assad because of the bigger geopolitical goals that the United States and the war machine has and has had ever since the Bush administration, and even before that when it goes to regime change in Syria. Many people are saying that this will soon lead to another chemical weapons attack, a false flag that, of course, will re-engage the United States inside of the Syrian military conflict, which wouldn't surprise me, as even the New Yorker pointed out in a very telling article that is called Donald Trump's New World Order. This is a very interesting article. I'm actually going to send it to the chat room so some of the people could read along here. But the byline of this article says how the president, Israel, and the Gulf states plan to fight Iran and leave the Palestinians and the Obamas years behind. Now, obviously, if you've been following this YouTube channel, we've been talking about the collusion and the colluding that has been happening between the Israel, Saudi Arabia, and the United States. And regime change in Israel is one of their top priorities. We saw tension calm down with North Korea and in the South Asian Sea, especially with China and the United States. But people have to understand this problem, especially with Iran, that the United States has, is brewing to a very big boiling point. And it points out a lot of the evidence and a lot of the news that we've been talking about on this YouTube channel that is building up to this very dangerous crescendo of the possibility of an Iran war, whether it's with Israel, the United States, or even Saudi Arabia, which, of course, is already happening in a proxy sense. So, Jason, what did you get from this New Yorker article labeled Donald Trump's New World Order?
Well, first of all, this isn't just like an article. You know, this is an extensive piece. For instance, Iran or Iranian is in there 69 times. And you don't even see it in the beginning because there's really so many Israeli connections that are made here. And, you know, they don't give the Obama administration a pass either in this. They really discuss how the Obama administration was a puppet of Israel policy in the Middle East for many, many years. And then they try to say that tensions grew and, you know, they kind of got waited out until a more friendly administration was in there. And really, there is no more friendly administration to Israel so far that we've seen, Luke, than this Trump administration. They've given them everything. They've given them, you know, Jerusalem as their capital. And this article is an intense one. I really think people need to read it to understand how the Kushner family fits in, how, you know, Donald Trump has these connections to Israelis throughout his business career.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's
don't forget, one thing I want to bring up, sorry for interrupting you, Jason, is that Donald Trump chose Jared Kushner to be the man in charge of the Middle East peace talks. Jared Kushner, as a child, was allowing Netanyahu to sleep in his room. Jared Kushner went to the basement so Netanyahu could have his bed. That's how tied in these people are. And the collusion and obviously the clear bias is so evident that there's no hiding it anymore. And Obama's administration was also giving Israel what they wanted, but now Trump's administration is giving Israel everything they wanted, plus so much more, which is bringing also a lot of protest and a lot of conflict to the region.
Well, absolutely, Luke. And the other thing about this is, with refunding the white helmets, you think that this would be big news. No, it was passing news. And not only was it passing news when it was talked about in the mainstream media like CBS, ABC, NBC, it was talked about in a positive manner. You know, they don't want to go after Trump on real issues. Instead, they want to, you know, attack him for peace talks with North Korea. And that's a huge problem with our society because they're helping to lead the conversation of the masses, the ignorant, Luke.
Yeah, yeah, the propaganda is very, very evident because, oh yeah, there's actually peace between North Korea and the United States and South Korea. Horrible. That's bad. That's such a horrible thing. But when it comes to Israel and what's happening there and the atrocities that are happening there, they're like, meh, meh, meh. Some of the media now does talk about it, but obviously there's a very clear, big slant against getting both sides of the story. And you could see the bias when it comes to pushing for more conflict, more war, which of course feeds the war machine, feeds the corporatocracy, and is just the complete, utter backwards way of how human beings and civilizations should operate themselves in this existence that we call life. It makes absolutely no sense. And the situation's getting worse. I don't know if I sent you this article, but there's also news that broke this week how the Israeli government just approved a law that will criminalize the filming of IDF soldiers engaged in operational duties. So this situation, of course, is ramping up to just extreme proportions, especially if you look at the protests that have been happening with the Palestinians. Now, of course, there's a lot of propaganda and disinformation from both sides, but obviously there is a clear disadvantage to the Palestinians compared to the Israelis, who are obviously a lot more successful at killing the Palestinians. And obviously both sides hate each other, both sides want to kill each other. One side is a lot more effective at it, and therefore I believe there should be a lot of restraint, especially with the way Israel has been acting in Palestine. That's my personal two cents on it. Do you agree, Jason, or do you want to get into a little debate here?
Well, no, man. Obviously, I think it's really, really dangerous what's going on in the world. And I think it's, you know, you look at Israel, sure, but again, there's a war going on in Yemen. It's a proxy war that we're funding, Luke, and nobody in this country knows about it. So why don't you tell the people what's going on this week? Because it's a huge, huge crisis.
Yeah, I mean, The Intercept has a great title. The United States is exacerbating the world's worst humanitarian crisis by outsourcing its Yemen policy. And obviously, Saudi Arabia and the United States have been working together in a coalition against the Houthi rebels, who, of course, are connected to Iran. The Houthi rebels inside of Yemen are mainly going against Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda, which has been financed, sponsored, and supported by Saudi Arabia, which we're officially fighting on the side of, and allowing Sunni Wahhabists to regain control of that region when it is in conflict with the Houthis. And you would think, you know, the United States, when it comes to financing different groups, you would think it would learn its lesson, especially after all the terrorist attacks that have been happening in the West, and specifically financing and giving arms and weapons and training and getting rid of the enemies of the exact sect of Islam that goes to the West and commits terrorist attacks. It's like, hey, dude, like, it's that simple. Okay, now obviously it's a lot more complicated, and I can't just say it in a buzzword, but what's happening there is just utterly and completely backwards. And as we know, the coalition launches and airstrikes have been increasing, and there have been major attacks on the ports and airports, and it looks like the United States and Saudi Arabia are ready to put in the final nail in the coffin of the Yemen conflict by totally trying to eliminate all of the rebel groups and anyone standing in their way in Yemen from allowing Saudi Arabia to have more of an influence in that region. And again, that region, Yemen, is extremely important. Saudi Arabia can't have Houthi rebels that are supported by Iran in that specific area. There's a lot of natural resources in that area, and Saudi Arabia pretty much needs to engulf that area if they're going to prolong their survival, since we know economically, if you look at the predictions, Saudi Arabia is going to go broke soon. Saudi Arabia is going to go bankrupt. And they're a country that imports most of their fresh water, most of their food. They don't have agriculture. And it really looks like a very devastating situation is happening in Saudi Arabia. And whenever empires face these kind of declines, war is usually the answer. So we're seeing this war ramp up. But again, one thing that is very telling about Saudi Arabia in this specific region is they can't even take out the poorest people on the planet. They can't even take out a bunch of ragtag rebels. So it shows that their military capabilities are not as efficient as a lot of people may think, especially with just how much money they have coming directly from the United States that Jared Kushner personally negotiated a better deal for. So again, people, you know, we say a couple sentences here, but there's so much information just loaded up in that specific context that people need to understand. What's going on here is not right. What's going on here is totally backwards. What they're telling you in the media about this is completely untrue, or you're most likely not even hearing about it. And that's an atrocity within itself, because if you look at Yemen right now, it is the worst humanitarian crisis in the world right now. More people are suffering because of that crisis, because of the United States, because of Saudi Arabia, than anywhere else in the world. And it shows you this kind of two-layer hypocrisy where there's staged white helmet chemical weapons attack that children are coming out of saying, these random people just grabbed me up and threw water at me and filmed me. That justifies a big moral outrage by the U.S. war machine that is, you know, directing their propaganda through U.S. mainstream media. Meanwhile, when we're looking at hundreds of thousands of children dying of cholera, of starvation, of bombs dropping on them. No, that's not important because it doesn't go along with morals. And again, the media is immoral, and if they had any morals or any integrity, they would, of course, try to put everyone's attention on Yemen, which, of course, we've been talking about. People who, on the right-wing media, independent alternative side, which they claim they are, which they're really not, who bootlick and brown-nose Donald Trump, they don't bring up Yemen. Yemen is truly an issue that should not be a left or right one, but it should be a right and wrong one and a moral one at that, especially when you look at your money going to the massive amounts of human suffering happening right now through U.S. tax dollars that no one's even talking about, Jason.
Well, absolutely, Luke. And, you know, the other caveat to that is that there is an entire industry built around wars like this one that the people don't know, and that weapons manufacturing industry, of course, is going to try to keep this on the low, keep it out of people's minds, and of course spin it positively so that they don't lose out. You know, these are the same people, as we're going to get into later, that are against the North Korean deal. You know, that's why you're hearing this ridiculous propaganda against peace, because this is huge, huge business. We don't understand. These bombs dropping, they're worth billions and billions of dollars to certain people and certain interests. And that's why the system has to change. We can't have for-profit proxy wars that the people don't know about. And I'm very for Rand Paul's solution that we should be voting on these strikes in Congress to see if we want to be a part of them, because we're picking the targets, Luke.
Not only picking the targets, but actively engaging and allowing this to happen and giving them the bombs and giving them all this information, and also having U.S. Special Forces and U.S. Special Operations officers on the ground committing some of these atrocities. So these are the stories that are very important, that are important to keep Trump's feet to the fire on, that of course the left doesn't talk about, the right will never talk about. But these are the issues that really need to be highlighted, really need to be talked about, since you're seeing such an effect on humanity because of them, and such a double standard and such hypocrisy that of course it makes people look at the United States in a distasteful way, which again, like, this is not the way it should be. It should be totally different. And again, the first segment that we covered here, very critical of Donald Trump. The next segment that we're going to jump into actually gives Donald Trump some credence in what he has been dealing with as president of the United States, especially when it comes to this IG report. And this is also one thing before, Jason, I want you to kind of intro this IG report story. But specifically what I wanted to say here is that many people who watch this broadcast are usually confused, because they're like, oh, yeah, you love Trump, I love you, man. And I'm like, no. Other people are going on the other side saying, oh, man, you hate Trump, man, good, I hate him too. I'm like, no, let's call things like they are. It doesn't have to be that bipartisan, that asinine, and that idiotic. If something bad happens, you call it out. If something good happens, you call it out just as, you know, equally, and you don't let your bull crap and your personal bias get in the way of your actual news reporting. So this is going to be the segment where we talk about some of the obstacles Donald Trump is dealing with, and some of the things that do shed a more positive light on some of the kind of FBI bullcrap and hooey that has been happening against him. Jason?
Yeah, absolutely, because you know what, Luke? The world is a complex place, and that's what people don't seem to understand, is that it's not black and white, right? There are elements that would have rather seen Hillary Clinton in there. So right now, Luke, I just want to barrel through very quickly the mainline stories that you heard of, and then what I think is buried in this report as the real story that nobody's talking about. And again, if people were paying attention, these aren't really stories at all. This is the stuff that they kind of whitewash. Yeah, they allowed you to know that, yes, we won't let it happen. The Stork text message, we'll never let that happen. They, you know, you'll stop Trump from becoming president. We already knew this. And we also know there are 50,000 text messages that still haven't come out. So obviously they're limiting the information. Let's get to the next big revelation. Oh, the Washington Times always blocks me out. This is basically that we know that Obama lied about knowing about Hillary's emails. The National Review, yes, Hillary should have been prosecuted. You know, Comey in there, of course, concealed information, acted more than negligently, you name it. And at the end of the day, my biggest thing in this, Luke, is when you look at the child trafficking aspect that so many people have pointed to, what do you find out? Well, I'm going to read this verbatim so people can understand. All right. Now, it's in here a few times, but this is the only time that you find out that in September, on September 28th, the email to the case agent and the special agent in charge, okay, that's the FBI agent in charge, was advised the case agent should review for only evidence of crimes related to the sexual exploitation of children, enticement, and obscenity, and instructed the case agent that all other communications between Anthony Weiner and Huma Abedin, a.k.a. any email that had his wife on there, and here it is in quotations to let you know that this means all emails pertaining to this investigation were completely sequestered, even if there are other parties in the communications. In other words, a forwarding from Hillary Clinton or John Podesta or any of these people. If there was that evidence, Luke, it was not allowed to be looked at. So I think that's pretty important. And that's
a major bombshell that you brought up there that I haven't really heard anywhere else. Reiterate that point one more time so people get it.
Yeah. Let's read it again. I mean, again, so again, when they had these emails, and by the way, if you look up earlier, this is page 276, we're repeating. This is like a 500-page plus report. But if you go up to 273, you find out that here it was very shortly after that he found that there were over 300,000 emails on this laptop. Read it for yourself, folks. So then we come down here, and again, he was to review only evidence of crimes related to the sexual exploitation of children, enticement, and obscenity. And you think, well, great, but here's the caveat. And instructed the case agent that emails and other communications between Weiner and Abedin, even if the emails and other communications between Weiner and Abedin had other parties to the communication, should be sequestered and not reviewed at this time. So once again, Luke, we have more evidence of real FBI obstruction when it comes to the emails, because again, they can't even admit that Seth Rich leaked these things. It's the Ruskies, my friend.
Yeah, this is a totally botched investigation. I mean, abolish the FBI on all accounts. The FBI gets, you know, praise from Democrats when they go after Trump with this whole little Russia investigation. They got praise from the right-wingers when they supposedly called out Hillary Clinton. But as we're learning, the rabbit hole gets a lot deeper here. The corruption here, the bias, just the bullcrap that's happening within this official investigation is an outcry. And again, the FBI has been able to get away with so many horrible crimes throughout their existence, whether it's, you know, reaching out to Martin Luther King and trying to, you know, write letters to promote his suicide, making sure that his wife knew about the infidelities of Martin Luther King, COINTELPRO, so many illegal activities, so many killings and homicides that the FBI committed that they were never held accountable for. And now we're just getting a final kind of peek into just how ridiculous the entire institution is. And ultimately, they should just be abolished totally, in my mind. Now, obviously, a lot of people are commenting on these two biased FBI employees who are part of this investigation who said, we'll stop Trump. Well, obviously, they didn't, and obviously, they failed. So this doesn't really point to Trump versus the deep state. If you pay attention to some of the stories we covered earlier, this is wings of the establishment vying for power and influence and trying to slow each other down in the petty games, when overall they're all still aligned in the same goals and trying to go into the same trajectory of more power and control and trying to screw everyone else over. And ultimately, if there was justice, you got to give this up to Donald Trump. Hillary Clinton would be in jail. She needs to be in jail. She needed to be in jail a few years ago. Especially as Secretary of State under Donald Trump's administration. She needed to go to jail way before even people started talking about her going to jail. But this investigation, totally botched, totally nonsensical, and just a complete and utter waste of time for the American people.
Well, absolutely, Luke. And now we're kind of seeing the tail end of this thing. It's kind of coming to a crescendo because there really isn't any evidence of Russian collusion. Again, if you've been paying attention, Robert Mueller is not a good person. So on the wings of this, by the way, I don't think that Paul Manafort is a good person. But what they got him on was something, you know, a decade plus before Trump was even running. And now they've sent him to jail. They're trying to strong-arm him. But again, to illustrate, there is a separate set of rules for people like Manafort and people like Luke Radowski. Manafort's on the VIP list over at the Virginia jail. I mean, yeah, you know, they put him there, but at the same time, they'll play ball. And I think that alone kind of speaks to the inner workings of the, you know, striving for more power. You know, from the Democratic Party or the Republican Party. At the end of the day, they're all taking money from these lobbyists. They're controlled by globalist interests. They're working towards a lot of the same goals, but they're the ones that want to stay on top, Luke. And, you know, that's why this, you know, the Trump-Kim handshake, well, guess what happened? U.S. defense stocks tanked after that. And hurrah, hurrah, my friend. That's a good thing. But do you think it's a good thing to the people in power that were heavily invested in them, Luke? And do you think they like that sort of thing?
No, it's definitely not good to John Bolton and all the neoconservative, bloodthirsty war hawks that he serves. And we, you know, everything's becoming more evident because of our ability to finally communicate with one another, even though big social media companies are trying to censor anything getting away from the status quo. But, you know, you look at the major people who are critical of this peace deal that happened between North Korea and the United States, they were predominantly think tanks that were connected to the military-industrial complex that profits off war. And obviously, this news of peace will not make have investors running to Lockheed Martin being excited and happy. Obviously, this is bad news. And for a lot of psychopaths that are out there within these businesses, within these corporations, within these kind of structures that gel government and corporations together that we have to live through, that pretty much run policy, that run our life and decides who lives and dies, is sadly decided on a profit motive. So these people are trying to profit off death. You see that clearly from just not only the news coverage, the think tanks, the influencers, the big money that was thrown to media to poo-poo this peace deal, like it's a horrible thing that there's peace. It's so clear right now. But yet again, the main struggle that we're dealing with is getting this message out when it's being sequestered so effectively by the big social media giants that, of course, don't want you to see this, that also get money from those same industries. And killing people is a big industry, and it needs to be exposed, and it needs to be stopped immediately.
Yeah, Luke, I totally agree. And, you know, we talked about how they may try to derail this peace process. Well, days after the summit, Homeland Security is saying there's been malicious cyber activity from North Korea. Oh, what a coincidence. Right when the good times start rolling, when the peace talks start going, now it's malicious cyber activity from a country where most citizens don't have the internet. And I wouldn't think, I mean, I don't think their technological capabilities are, incomplete by any means. Obviously, South Korea is huge, Seoul is huge. But at the same time, now that they're becoming, you know, malicious hackers conveniently right after these peace talks, it's very odd. And Luke, this is something we didn't plan on going over, but since this broke while we were sitting here, I really think that we should cover it, especially when we're covering the war machine, my friend.
Let's finish talking about North Korea and then go into this breaking news. Let me just go on Twitter quickly just so I can pay attention to see what's going on. But people need to understand how a lot of the neoconservatives, especially after 9/11, were kind of setting this kind of landscape of a, quote, cyber 9/11. And people need to understand the ability to fake cyber attacks is extremely, extremely possible here as a, quote, false flag, especially an online false flag that could lead to retaliation or even destroying these peace talks in the future, because it doesn't make sense for North Korea to cyber attack the United States, which, of course, we're hearing reports of from the FBI and DHS, but again, not much solid information. What's the breaking news that's happening right now, Jason?
Well, we got U.S.-led coalition strikes, Syrian army positions in Deir ez-Zor province, and that's coming from the Syrian state media. So I would bet your bippy there's at least some military attacks, and if it's a U.S.-led coalition, again, who are they attacking? Luke, I thought we were fighting ISIS. These don't sound like ISIS is being attacked. That's weird, right?
Yeah, ISIS is definitely not being attacked, because the people fighting ISIS, the people fighting the rebel groups, the people that are fighting the insurgency, the mainly foreign insurgency that was put there by foreign interests who wanted to get rid of Assad, they're the ones who are getting attacked, which absolutely makes no sense at all. I'm putting up Twitter right now just so I could read and see what's going on here. But it looks like the United States, of course, is threatening Syria as tensions have calmed down with North Korea. When we were reporting on it, I always said, keep an eye out for the Middle East. Just because tensions have calmed down between North Korea, that doesn't mean that Trump still will not appease the deep state, the deeper military-industrial complex, like he has been doing effectively, especially when it comes to Iran, Syria, and the Middle East turmoil that has been happening in that country. But, U.S. coalition, forces, I mean, the attacks are just ramping up all over the Middle East, not only with Israelis going after the Palestinian protesters, but also in Yemen, of course, in Syria. And really, I mean, what could be happening here potentially is a bigger conflict in the works right now, with Saudi Arabia trying to finish off Yemen, with tensions calming down with North Korea. This could be the perfect kind of escalation to really ramp up into something bigger. As we know, the Bilderberg meeting just happened last week. So did the NATO meeting. So did the G7. All those people were meeting at the same exact time, as well as the Russian-China summit that had countries like Pakistan, India, and Iran a part of that conference as well. So we're seeing last week was very, very important to set up this kind of roadmap that we're seeing being set up. But this latest series of events, personally, I believe, is a buildup to something bigger, calming tensions with North Korea to make sure that there's no possible conflict there that could distract the United States from a bigger engagement, and of course trying to finish off Yemen so the Saudi Arabian forces are also available to be on command and on call for something bigger, which will most likely lead to an Iranian conflict that sadly looks inevitable.
Well, I really hope it is not inevitable, and you know, that brings us to our next story. You know, while most of the media was saying that this North Korean summit was a bad thing, the Chicago Tribune really wasn't one of them. They were happy about it. And they even asked the question, after North Korea, can Trump get a summit with Iran? Now, of course, this piece takes the exact opposite of the New Yorker piece that we went over just a little while ago. But again, I'm hopeful that maybe this guy can get this done. It's very hard for me to believe, especially with his policy, especially in the Middle East, and having John Bolton in his ear constantly, Luke. But it's nice at least to see some media outlets giving credit where credit is due. And then, you know, what do you know? Promoting peace, Luke. I mean, is it so bad for a media outlet to promote peace?
Yeah, it is, because it's bad for their profits and it's bad for the war pigs that keep putting on the lipstick of all these horse stream prostitutes that are just reading off scripts that they're given off to read. And obviously, war sells. War is a big industry, and war is a driving industry within the United States, not only with its lobbying efforts, but also with its economic efforts. I'm looking at the story right now We're seeing the Prime Minister of Israel coming out saying that he will hit Iran throughout Syria, not only along the border. I'm seeing some of the attack areas that were just hit right now. I'm going to have to do more research on this before we get into full details of it. But as of right now, it looks like the U.S. coalition has yet again launched another strike. As we know, there was two very publicized ones that happened last year and also a few weeks ago. But even in between the one that was well publicized a few weeks ago, there's another U.S. coalition bombing that happened that didn't get much media attention. We'll see how this one plays out. We'll see the full details of it when it comes out and we know more about it, so we could report on this, obviously, more accurately. What's the next story we have up, Jason?
Yeah, obviously, we need to go over probably the biggest story in the United States right now, and that is the migrant story, the separation of family story that is getting so much attention. We've got a video of Trump's response to the press over at We Are Change right now, where he says, look, this isn't my policy per se. This has been in the works for some time. The Democrats used it. You can look into it yourself. Thousands of families had been separated in 2014, 2015, 2012. And one of the things that went viral, Luke, was this picture here of migrant children sleeping in cages, only this is under the Obama administration. And I just want to let everybody know that we'd like to find a much better solution than separating children from their parents anywhere. However,
yeah. Let go of the politics and just think about the consequences of that, or if that happened to you and your children. And obviously, a lot of right wingers are trying to kind of amplify this with a lot of emotional kind of reactions, trying to obviously support this and push for this. But just think about the human implications of this and try to let go of politics for just a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, we're not saying that, you know, this is a good thing and that the president's saying, oh, I can't do an executive order. I need 15 or 16 more votes on the Democratic side, and then we can make a change to this policy. So right now, there's a lot of he said, she said, but it seems to me this is a problem that could be fixed. But at one instance, Luke, the president's solution would be a very good wall. And he's not wrong that drugs are trafficked over the border, humans are trafficked over the border. Many times these are children out of South America
Mexico. I disagree with you, Jason.
You don't think that's real?
No, I don't believe the wall would make us better and safer. If you want to get rid of the drugs coming in this country, you get rid of the CIA, and you hold the CIA officials that have been running crack cocaine and cocaine from South America into this country. When you look at this wall, if you look at the immigration that actually comes into the United States, it's predominantly from people overstaying their visas and flying into the United States. Crossing that border wall is not as effective, and the numbers from that are not as big as people think. And I don't think building this huge wall, especially when we have so much infrastructure problems, and especially when the government wants so much money for it, wouldn't be a bright or smart idea at all, especially if you look at the logistics of it and how government is going to be using eminent domain to take away people's property. And that, to me, is one of the most un-American things that could happen. So even if you are anti-immigrant, the wall wouldn't stop most of the migration that is happening to this country. And people need to understand that.
Yeah, but I don't think I'm anti-immigrant. Jason, I just think
I'm not saying you are. I'm just saying hypothetically the people who are anti-immigrant, who do want the wall built. I say, you know, if you're going to do that, build a wall with Canada, because they're annoying sometimes. That's a whole other topic. But on a serious note here, personally, I don't think the wall is a good idea. I don't think it's going to serve any purpose. I don't think it's going to have a long-term effect. If you disagree with me, that's cool too. But I would love to hear your thoughts on that as well.
All right, so then I guess we're just going to move on, agree to disagree on that one, because we got some kind of big news. Unless you want to further discuss it, this, to me anyway, Luke, was really, really huge just for the implication of what actually happened here. We had somebody from the Daily Mail actually get on the inside of Bilderberg, and now the article goes into why.
And Jason, feel free to give me your points or your counterpoints if you want to make them as well.
What, on the immigration issue?
Yeah. I think it's interesting to have this dialogue and this discourse, which I think is vital, and I think it's important. And well, I definitely right, so, don't, because I felt a little bit like I just kind of talked over you and kind of steamrolled a little, and I don't want to do that.
Well, I heard that perspective. But yeah. For me, my biggest problem with the wall would be the eminent domain. That's something, obviously, I'm not for. You know, I was very against this president, for instance, taking the land from the Indians who had won it. I'm sorry, Native Americans who had won it, and then said, no, we're going with this pipeline anyway. And then the media completely stopped reporting on it because, you know, it suited big business. So I see that point. But to me, there are so many people that are trying to come to this country, like you talked about, via plane, right? And a lot of those people go through a long and bitter process to try to become citizens and are often denied, sometimes after being here 5, 10, 15 years, remaining employed, paying taxes. And it just doesn't seem fair to me that those people that did it the right way get sent home or, like you said, overstay their visas because they're being thrown out because there is such a crisis. When you have people getting over the border, going into places like Texas, getting licenses, and moving to sanctuary cities like San Antonio, where you can literally break the law. And if I break the law, I've got to pay a fine. I've got to maybe spend the night in jail. Maybe they spend the night on jail. They're not paying a fine. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not fair to me. So I think there are problems with our policy. I'm not saying we should round everybody up that's here and kick them out. I think that's absolutely ludicrous. I think that, first of all, you do need to secure that border for that reason alone, but to start. Once you do that, you can start a process where you would have a fast-track way for people in this country, no matter how they got here, that have been here over 5 years to stay and become citizens. And then we can work it out from there, man. I'm not trying to separate babies, but I think there is, you know, at some point we have to do something.
Yeah, I'm definitely not a fan of separating babies, but I'm also not a fan of paying taxes because that usually goes to the war machine or fat cat bureaucrats. And people need to understand, if the wall's built, it's most likely going to be used at keeping us in instead of preventing people from coming in to this country. Again, I'm not I'm just not a fan of it because, again, people overstaying their visas is how they're doing it. And you do bring up a good point where it's not fair. Illegal immigration is not fair. It is something that needs to be dealt with, not on the left and right hyperbolic issue, but from a human issue. Human families, children should not be excluded from their mothers. Corporations should not hire illegal immigrants and get rid of job protections and treat them as slaves. Again, this is why a lot of the big businesses have been supporting mass migration and illegal immigration, because immigrants are able to come in and, sadly, corporations take advantage of them. And a lot of people are saying, you know, my job, this is my job. It's not even about that. There is an aspect of more workers allowing for less wages to happen. And that argument is very valid because obviously in supply-demand economics, people need to understand that if you have an abundance of something, obviously the value of it will be low. If we have an abundance of new workers that are willing to work like slaves and treated like slaves because they're illegals and corporations get to take advantage of them, this is something that really, really needs to be addressed. And I'm not seeing anyone talk about those specific issues. It does affect your employment. It does affect your wages. But the bigger effect here are these corporations that are equivalently using slave labor and mistreating human beings. And the story that we're seeing here, obviously the photo from how Barack Obama did it and how the mainstream media was just totally silent about it, using it now to vilify Donald Trump. The immigration issue needs to be brought up, and it needs to be dealt with. And I don't think the right answer is the wall, and I don't think the right answer is allowing more illegal immigration to happen. But at the same time, I don't want more taxes. I don't want more walls. I don't want more government. The less government, the better. History has told us that, throughout our existence.
Well, I agree. I think there's ways to do it, by the way, Luke, where we could have less government, because one of the first things that, you know, if I were ever in office would do is disband Homeland Security, all together and, you know, have a very, very large regrouping of what our agencies do and how they do them. And yeah, we do need less government. By the way, I want to thank Jesse Schmidt for that super chat. Didn't say anything, but just kind of gave us a hey now. So we appreciate that. All right. I think we should move on because we're already an hour deep into this broadcast and we had a huge story. Now, Luke, you busted your ass this year over at Bilderberg. This may be the most times you were ever detained for anything over a three-day period, I believe. And unbelievably, you know, a lot of people like to knock the Daily Mail, and they are tabloidy, and they do outrageous stuff, and you'll see a Bigfoot story there now and again, by the way. However, they got into Bilderberg. Now, this woman, here's a little video we're watching right here, going through the corridors. They make her put tape over her phone's cameras. She was able to get these little scorecards where you rate certain events, Luke. I thought that was quite interesting. But even she admitted in what was a very, very well-written article that, you know, she was a stone's throw away from some of the most powerful people in the world discussing policy, discussing business, but she couldn't even hear them. And, you know, she said to herself, you know, somebody else could have done a lot of damage here, and there's that, but their veil of secrecy remains intact. So what am I taking away from this? Well, there's a shout-out to Charlie Skelton, John Ronson. Charlie Skelton now in the game over a decade. His article got picked up by Newsweek this year, you know. I asked him when his book is coming out. You know, I really do hope he takes that seriously and considers writing a book on the matter. Do you think this is it for security at Bilderberg now that somebody's gotten in? Do you think that we're going to see more of this, or are they going to triple security and next year there may be some unnecessary probing of Luke Radowski?
No, they're definitely going to be tripling security already outside. They're very secure, but also what the story tells us is that inside, they're very secure in how they handle themselves, because this person, you know, again, it's also very telling in how they told this person to act and treat the fellow Bilderberg members, the secret private event that they were told to cover. But she wasn't able to hear any of the bigger kind of private conversations that happened, the real kind of bread and butter, the real kind of illegal activities when you have so many interests. When you have, you know, Exxon Mobil and the princes and kings and the military-industrial complex work out the next bigger geopolitical deal, as we have the experts on war and predicting war also at the table. So she sadly was not able to hear anything. The security procedures that they had inside were very interesting. She was told not to talk to them, not to look at them. She was telling them how they were just ordering her around, the Bilderberg members, you know, screaming at her for still water when she had still water from one of the Italian Bilderberg members, how they made her cover up her phone. Obviously, you know, very, very good work, far beyond what many other people have been able to accomplish. So, still a very big nod to this Daily Mail reporter. Obviously, excellent job, great details in there, really gives a bigger perspective. But sadly, that kind of big moment of actually hearing and seeing what they're up to was also missed. And it's purposefully kept away by security to make sure that they really don't hear anything that happens.
Well, absolutely, Luke. And, you know, one of the big things that you got was a confrontation outside of Bilderberg with John Hickenlooper, the Democratic governor of Colorado that many, Luke, think is going to be running for president under the Democratic Party next year, maybe with Kasich. Now, the real question is, who's really going to run? And people are now talking Biden. And I got to tell you, Luke, I don't think Biden is a viable candidate, not because of just his age, but if you saw this, it was pretty amazing. You've seen the videos, Luke. You've seen those C-SPAN videos of Joe Biden just appearing to be unacceptable with children. There's one girl in particular there. It's pretty tough
disturbing
to watch.
Videos.
Yes.
Yeah. Disturbing videos.
So before even a presidential run, what about the girls you molested on C-SPAN? Heckler asks Biden. And, you know, Biden's always a tough guy. He's always responding, you know, I punch Trump right in his snoot, you know, like, oh, if we were in the locker room, let me tell you. So he calls the guy a scumbag. But as far as I know, Luke, there's no video of the heckler manhandling children on video. What are your thoughts? Is this guy going to be able to run?
I definitely want to see that video. I confronted Joe Biden a number of times. I'm trying to look up the video right now. We got him on a number of times, but he's a dirty, dirty, dirty politician, not only from the C-SPAN videos, but all of his actions and doings, not only as a former U.S. senator, but also vice president of the United States, where he had a more symbolic role. And the symbology behind him as vice president is, of course, Creepy Joe, Creepy Uncle Joe. So definitely a weirdo. I'm trying to look up the videos where we actually confronted him. To see what
well,
we
if anybody wants to know, they're also
well, we've got them on like terrorist funding as well.
It's on Fabled Enemies. Both of your confrontations are in the film Fabled Enemies because you described to him the transaction between General Mahmoud Ahmed and Muhammad Atta just before the attacks, and he acknowledges them the first time, and then the second time you get him, he goes, "I can't talk about that; it's classified," as he runs away. And, you know, that film came back out in 2008 when he was a senator.
Yeah, and then I get pushed aside by, I believe it was a Boston Globe journalist. And he's like, who do you like, the Red Sox or the Yankees? And I'm like, you got to be freaking kidding me. I get interrupted from this important conversation about this. Because he was on the Security Council as a senator. He knew a lot of the ins and outs, a lot of the dirty stuff, especially around 9/11, especially around the United States involvement with radical Islamic terrorists. And I'm like, finally, we're getting something. My God, he just admitted this. And this butthole... I'm not going to curse. I'm sorry. It's late. It's like almost 3 o'clock in the morning. It is 3 o'clock in the morning. Gosh darn it. I have a flight at 6. Okay, let's finish this up. We have a super chat, Jason.
Yes.
Let's go over the super chat. It's also by Jesse Schmidt, who says, quote, "The wall is a symbol of the victory over the establishment, even though it's ineffective and likely to just be used against us in the future." Thoughts? I agree with how ineffective it will be and that it will be possibly used against us. But the symbol of, you know, a big wall, a big kind of prison holding Americans in, which is most likely what it's going to be used for, is not really worth the expense of it and also the eminent domain and American citizens losing their land. That's my point of view. I kind of like the way you worded that, Jesse. It's very very dynamic statement. Jason, what are your comments on that?
See, I don't think it's going to be ineffective at all if done the right way. You know, I think that if you had certain ports where you could enter and leave Mexico, much like we have on the border now, accompanied by a wall that was probably manned by the National Guard, and that could be very easily done, Luke, if we bring, you know, half of the 32,000 troops on the Korean border home, just half. We'll take home half, and that's 16,000 troops right there. This could be a good thing. I know we disagree on the logistics, and obviously, again, I think that eminent domain would be the worst part of that issue. But I think it's a good start, and I think it would be more than symbolic. That's my answer to that, Mr. Radowski.
I disagree. If the United States knows anything, it's prisons. We have the biggest prison population in the entire world. It would be a very symbolic prison that they would build. And again, with the technological advancements and the war machine having so many new toys that they play with, you could easily secure the border. Again, the United States is known for prisons. They know how to keep people in places. It would be very, very easy with the latest drone technology, with the latest... Google enhanced artificial intelligence surveillance programs and facial recognition programs, that they could just use robots to stop mass migration. But of course they won't. They're using them right now to bomb the crap out of Yemeni children and blow them up to smithereens. What's the next article we have there?
Well, you know, we were talking about Democrats before that. And basically, the left is acknowledging not only is it the end for Bill Clinton, but he needs to get out of the spotlight because he's only going to hurt the Democrats at this point. A big quote that came up from a previous interview is he says, you know, the norms have changed with what you can do against somebody's will, Luke.
Only Bill Clinton would say that.
And, you know, again, he says it in a manner where you almost kind of have to do a double take, but at the end of the day, it means the same thing. It's like, hey, yeah, you know I was dirty. You know I was grabbing and tabbing and doing a lot of things that people didn't want me to do, but it was okay to get away with it then. So, you know, again, I was just representing the old guard, Joe Biden, Bill Clinton. These are the dinosaurs of the Democratic Party, and that's why I think it's so important what you did with Hickenlooper at Bilderberg, because I really could see him getting the nod and being the next guy, Luke.
Yeah, of course. I mean, he's one of the people that everyone's looking at. Colorado has very good PR around its legalization of marijuana, which is going to be a very big issue. This is why I think we're seeing Trump kind of capitulate on that issue and call for saying that he possibly will support marijuana to be legalized within the United States. That video is going to play out for a while, but the statement by Bill Clinton is really eye-opening to the type of individual that he is. Okay, let's run to the next stories and end at Kevin Spacey, if you could, Jason.
Yep, absolutely. In fact, the next two kind of are intertwined, for instance. We have another DJ, Jonathan King. He's 73 years old. Now, this man was convicted of molesting underage boys back in the 80s. Now he has 24 more counts against him. I did a video on this earlier this week, Luke. But what is really crazy about this is if you scroll down, there's a picture with him, another infamous DJ. He's sitting there. Oh, it's not here. It's in the thumbnail of the video that we did for WRC. But he's with Jimmy Savile. And they're in a room with a girl in a wheelchair, Luke. And we know that Savile took advantage of, you know, disabled children on top of being a necrophiliac. So here you go. You got a guy who was a producer for Genesis, heavily engulfed in the entertainment world. And, you know, he was using Samantha Fox to lure boys into his Rolls Royce where he would ply them with alcohol and drugs and then molest them, allegedly.
There's evil people, and then there's like satanic evil monsters, and you know, I can understand why people think other people are reptilians, because there's no way like anyone could conceive any of the behavior that a lot of these elites like Jimmy Savile and even the former Prime Minister of the United Kingdom have been committing, horrible things. And it's, you know, it's impossible to even just bring your awareness to, because it's something that you as a human being would never do. But there's real monsters out there, as we're seeing from this story and also just other stories, especially with Kevin Spacey returning to the bright lights of Hollywood, which that's so stupid, man. Like, why? Like you picked this next story that we're talking about here.
Because again, he was charged with the same exact thing that we're talking about with Jonathan King. We have multiple young men, one of which is on Star Trek, saying he was a 14-year-old boy in a hotel room, and Kevin Spacey plied him with alcohol and got on top of him and tried to take advantage of him sexually. On top of this, we know he's good buddies with the norms of what you could do against somebody's will have changed, Bill Clinton. He spent numerous years traveling with him, sometimes even on Jeffy Epstein's jet. And this guy's never been prosecuted for any of his crimes. There's a Vulture article.
With Bill Clinton as well.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He traveled
with the Lolita Express with Secret Service being ditched by Bill Clinton when he's going on, you know, his private airplane, you know, airplane with, of course, Kevin Spacey as well, who's also pictured with all three of them.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, his Hollywood career ain't over. And you know what? He made his bones, Luke. His big moment was The Usual Suspects. Great movie. directed by Bryan Singer, a man who they can't even tell you is directing a movie anymore because there's so many accusations of pedophilia against him. But you know what, Luke? That doesn't matter because he was the highest paid director in the world this year. And they just announced that he was actually the person that directed the upcoming Queen biopic, Bohemian Rhapsody. So it seems like it's okay in Hollywood to be a child molester, and they are very open about it. It's extremely disturbing, and that's why we report that. I wish it wasn't the story we were ending on here at We Are Change, but unfortunately, it's a tough one.
Yeah, it's a tough one, and it's really hard to talk about because there's nothing really else you could say except these guys are horrible, satanic monsters. This is why people believe in reptilians, because of how evil and cold-blooded these bloodsucker. I can't curse. This is a family-friendly show. Definitely not an easy way to end the show, but people need to know about this information. It's not an easy talk. It's not an easy topic to talk about. Plus, it's also 3 o'clock in the morning, and I'm also very exhausted. But we also have some super chats that we have to get through and address and talk to everyone. This one is by William May, who is asking me, why do you side with Shia terrorists over Sunni terrorists? Luke, are you a Shia Muslim? Nope, I am not a Shia Muslim. If you look at historically the birth of Wahhabism and coming from the Saudi Empire, you could see Arabs being totally different than they were before. It was really the onset of this new kind of radical Wahhabist that kind of thrived after World War I, when France and the United Kingdom failed to give the Arabs their territory that was promised to them, that allowed Wahhabism to thrive in the region, that really promoted new rules, a new way of life within the Middle East that have created the utter chaotic mess that we're seeing now. I point a lot of the responsibilities towards more of the Sunni terrorists, mainly because they're the ones who have the biggest influence, because they have the biggest pocketbooks. Those pocketbooks, that money, comes from Saudi Arabia, which finances mosques, schools, and other institutions that many terrorists have come from that have committed terrorist attacks. Shias, I would say, are not as violent and don't have that violent history. Not to say that there aren't any Shia terrorists, because yes, Shia terrorists do exist. They are a major issue, especially in the northern Syrian territory, and they have been used historically as an effective tool that has worked for some dictators and some warlords inside of the Middle East. But if you look at the numbers and the statistics here, there is a clear correlation between Sunni Wahhabism thinking and terrorism that happens in the West. And it's a lot more predominant on the Sunni side than on the Shia side. That's only a fact, but there's also those instances on, you know, both sides, and both of those sides obviously needs to be squashed, and it needs to be the belief that you need to commit terrorist attacks needs to be totally eliminated from their belief system. And again, it predominantly came from Sunni Wahhabism. Sorry, a little long tangent there. Got another one by Jesse Smith saying, I was a little late to the stream, through on VOP in Tuscan and the alleged human trafficking discovery. Thoughts on the VOP in Tuscan and the alleged human
trafficking. It's the VOP, Veterans on Patrol, Tucson, Arizona, scandal. Now, I have looked into this, Luke. I'm pretty sure you're unfamiliar with it just by the way you're looking at it.
Yeah.
So what he's talking about is Veterans on Patrol went to this site that was CMEX property, and they found an alleged trafficking camp of children. Now, I've looked at this evidence. I know it's very controversial to say one way or the other. And right now, I'm kind of on the fence. You know, they found children's toys there. They found things that were secured to trees that they said were used as rape trees. Other people have contested that they were not normal. There was some burning and destruction going on afterwards. They found a human skull, I think 15 or 20 miles away. They said it was a child's skull. That wasn't proven. Apparently, cadaver dogs did come out. So I know that top levels of law enforcement have been dishonest in the past, but I also know that the guy that led this Veterans on Patrol apparently has stolen valor. So I'm looking at it from all angles. I'm reserving judgment, and I think everybody out there should too. I know there's some people putting in the work. So let's see where the research leads. But remember, sometimes, you know, these things get out of control and there are hoaxes out there, Luke, or there just are misrepresentations. I think that's something we have to keep in mind.
And speculations, because they're click tits and have a lot of people's attention and sadly are a good motive for a lot of other people out there to have their media organization on. And it needs to stop. It needs to stop with better viewers and more people discerning stuff and not just believing stuff because they want to, or it confirms their personal bias. Usually people like to consume media from people who are opinionated and have the same core beliefs as they do. So they love, you know, usually people psychologically just want to hear their opinions kind of regurgitated back to them, which of course we don't do here, since we criticize Trump when he needs to be criticized, and we also acknowledge some of the things that he has to face that are unfair against him. The last super chat that we have, again, from Jesse Smith, thank you so much, Jesse, for all your support and help, is thanks for covering Bilderberg and the live streams. My daughter, Brooklyn, and I enjoy the streams. Enjoy your evening. Thank you so much, Jesse, for your super chats and everyone else's super chats, because really, this broadcast would not be possible if it wasn't for you guys. Again, we're not like BuzzFeeds promoted by ExxonMobil or Big Money. There's no government here. It's pretty much just me and Jason. Me, 3 o'clock in the morning, somewhere here in Riga, Latvia. Kind of weird place that I'm in, to say the least. And Jason all the way back in New York helping me run the show and just engaging in, the camera's going to fall now, engaging in a dialogue and a conversation about the news that we find important, and also being able to talk about it and also being able to discuss it even when we disagree with each other. So Jason, thank you for helping me do this live stream, for engaging and being honest with your opinions. Anything else you want to say before we end this broadcast?
No, man, I just want to thank everybody out there, because again, we wouldn't be able to cover things like Bilderberg, which I think is so important, because we are one of the very few outlets that is giving you news nobody else is, looking at it from all angles and doing these underreported stories and still getting a few views out there. So it's so important you guys like, share, subscribe, retweet, whatever you can do. I mean, that's how you can help, is get this information out. And again, if you disagree with us, we're listening to valid arguments. If you want to sit there in the troll box and just say the most ridiculous things, don't expect to be taken seriously. But when there's actual intellectual conversations, Luke and I are more than willing to have those conversations.
Yeah, if you look at independent media a few years ago to now, there's not many of us left, and there's not going to be many of us left, especially if things continue the way that they're going. And again, this is why I end every single broadcast by saying I love you, because it's really you guys that are allowing us to be here. So, Jason, thank you, and of course you guys. Love you guys. Thank you guys so much for watching. Stay tuned for more, and of course we'll be back here every Sunday. Expect more videos Monday through Thursday on this channel as well. Thank you. All right.
One second.